You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is... World Anvil is a browser-based world-building platform designed for all world builders, writers and novelists, dungeon masters, game developers, and everyone else. World Anvil keeps your world settings safe and organized, helps you find your characters, locations, plots, timelines, and maps quickly and easily as you write. Then, if you choose, you can showcase your amazing world building to the world, beautifully and interactively, to keep your readers engaged. You can even use our professional tier to build your career, selling access to behind-the-scenes content your readers will love, and growing your community. Build your world setting in any genre with over 25 custom-built world-building templates, complete with prompts to inspire your creativity. Allow your readers to explore the public parts of your world in an innovative new way with interactive maps, timelines, and wiki-style articles. Give special access to co-authors, beta readers, customers, or patrons to see exclusive behind-the-scenes content. There's a free version to get started with all of the major features. Guild membership offers you a host of extra options, including comprehensive privacy settings, co-authors, presentation options, and so much more. Join our community of over 800,000 world builders, including professional authors. Take part in competitions and learn more about world building at this fantastic online community. Use the coupon code HANK to get 20% off all 6 and 12 month subscriptions. WorldAnvil.com. I'm a recent convert and I know you will be too. Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm really excited to have Hannah Mary McKinnon on the show with me today. Hannah has a brand new book. It's called Sister Dear. And, oh, man, let me tell you, you need to have this book on your shelf for this summer reading season. It is absolutely phenomenal. Hannah, you cost me sleep, so I'll just put it that way. And right, exactly. That's one of those best compliments that you can give someone. Welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Hank. Thank you for having me, and thank you for that lovely compliment. That's fantastic. I'm thrilled you enjoyed it.
Absolutely. We begin each show with the same question each day, and that question is: what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
My very first memory. Well, I used to love writing at school. Whenever it was essay time, I was always really happy. And I was the kid in the back who would put their hand up and say, "Sir, miss, we haven't had a writing assignment for a long time." And then my colleagues would start throwing stuff at me to get me to shut up. You know, that was me. So I guess that's my earliest memory. And it was probably when I was in school in England in the late 70s, I think. That would be my earliest memory. But I didn't actually start writing until my early 40s. So it took a while.
Were you a bookish kid? Did you read a lot as a kid?
I did. I read lots. My mum and actually my dad too are both avid readers, and they used to, we lived in, I grew up in Switzerland, and we'd drive to England for Christmas holidays and stuff. And mum would, I can't read in a car unless it's with a Kindle, which is really bizarre. But anyway, on a device I can, but with a physical book, I feel sick. So she would used to buy us these cassette tapes, if anyone remembers those, and pop them into the car, and we'd listen to stories as well being read to us on tape. And my grandmother used to tell stories and record them for us and send them to us as well. So yeah, I did read a lot as a kid. I really did.
Do you remember a book or a series or an author that just completely blew your mind? Like you could not believe that that telling stories could transport someone to another place. Do you have that memory of that happening to you?
Do you know what? Probably when I was a teen, it was probably Stephen King. Because I used to read dark stuff, and then for a long time I would only touch rom-coms and lighthearted things. But I remember reading Stephen King, I think it was Carrie. And I just remember thinking, wow, you can write this kind of stuff, you know, how twisted is this? And that was probably one of the books where I just thought, this is incredible. But as a kid, I would read a lot of Enid Blyton at the time, the Famous Five series and books like that. So it was there were a lot of British influences in terms of Enid Blyton that would have come from my mum, who's English, and my dad, who's half Swiss, half English, born in Switzerland, raised in England. So yeah, there were a lot of Beatrix Potter and books like that as well, and the Mr. Men too. That I always loved to read, actually, as a kid, too.
I think Stephen King is a really unique... I have no idea what that noise is. I apologize. We'll edit that out. Okay, let me back up and try that again. I think Stephen King is a really unique gateway drug for a lot of people. He is one of those storytellers that is kind of legendary for his ability to create such immersive worlds and just suck people in. People that don't like, horror or, suspense or whichever genre he might be writing at the time will go along with him to places they would never go before because he just seems like such a nice guy to go along with.
Yes.
You know what I mean.
It's quite the skill. And do you know, I remember later on, I was probably, well, I guess I must have been in my late 20s, early 30s. I remember seeing a guy at work who was reading a book. And I said, oh, what are you reading? And he said, oh, it's Harry Potter. And I said, what's Harry Potter? And first of all, he said, where have you been living? I had three small kids in my defense. And I said, what's it about? And he told me, I said, hang on a minute, you're reading a kid's book. And he just looked at me and shook his head as if to say, you know nothing. And I looked at the books up and I got a copy. And that was it. I've read all of them, I don't know how many times. And J.K. Rowling has that je ne sais quoi as well, where she just draws people in, and it's a book about an 11-year-old kid who discovers he's a wizard. And I was right there. I went along for that ride through all of those books, couldn't wait for them to come out, went to see the movies, huge fan. And it's just such a talent to be able to suck people into the worlds they create, and those two really stand out for me, both of them.
Absolutely. You also talked about your very English influences through your mother's side, and a lot of those English writers who took you on journeys of their own. What is it that makes something inherently English in storytelling?
Well, for me, I think it's probably the language, the slang, the setting too, potentially, but it's the terminology, and particularly in dialogue. And I love to make my characters Brits, although I've only actually lived in England 4 years in total, would you believe, with with the accent I have, it's so strong. people are always a bit surprised, only 4 years, really. So it's really, for me, it's really interesting to be able to, and lovely to be able to put part of my heritage into my books and have British characters. And I've done that in most of mine. They've either been set in England or have a British protagonist, which is always a bit of fun and more comfortable for me as well to write, because I'm not second guessing whether the words I use are in fact they are not North American. And I know there's one example in Sister Dear that somebody pointed out, because the cast is actually all American. And I referred to a bobble hat. And a bobble hat is a hat with a bobble on top. And I didn't realize you guys don't call them that. So somebody said, oh yeah, a bobble hat. I had to look that up. So it's still, even though I tried very hard to make Eleanor and Sister Dear and all the cast very American, that one slipped through. So yes.
That's amazing. Hannah, you mentioned that you didn't start writing your fiction until a little later in life. What were you doing in the meantime?
Well, I had a very successful career in IT recruitment. So I left school, I did 2 business degrees and worked for a couple of companies. And in my early-ish, mid-20s, I joined an IT recruitment company, a startup effectively. And I went from, my original job title was do everything that isn't sales. Literally, that was my job title and that's what I did. And a decade later, I became CEO of the business. So it was quite the journey for me, the career journey. And it was fantastic. I loved that company. It was basically almost my first child, really. That's how I used to refer to it. I was passionate about it. But in the interim, a couple of years in, I met my husband, who is Canadian. And he moved to Switzerland. And after 11 years, he was quite homesick. And we'd had 3 kids. We had 3 boys in 16 months. I had twins the second time around. And he was a stay-at-home dad. And he just couldn't see how he would ever get back to his career. I loved my career, but it was incredibly stressful. I didn't see my kids much. I traveled a lot. I worked late. And there was this imbalance, really. And we figured that maybe Canada would offer us a better work-life balance. So we came to the Toronto area and settled here. That was in 2010, almost a decade ago. I can't believe it's gone by so fast. And I started up my own business here and it failed. It failed completely and miserably. It crashed and burned like nothing I'd ever seen before. And I was really, really lost. I didn't know who I was anymore. I'd attached my entire identity and status, if you like, to my job, this high-flying career. And with that gone, I didn't know what to do with myself. And Rob, my husband, he saw it as an opportunity. He said, you know, you can reinvent yourself. You can do whatever you like. If you could do anything, what would it be? And I didn't know. I didn't really have an answer. And then he said, okay, enough of the wallowing. What would you do if you could do anything? You know, come on, stop being a moaning myrtle, as a Harry Potter reference. What would you do if it could be anything? And I said, well, if I could, I would write books. And he said, well, why don't you do that then? So he was the one who really gave me the shove to get on with it. And so I did. I wrote my first book, and here we are. My fourth is published, and I have another two that have sold at least, and hopefully more after that as well.
So, Hannah, did you work for a headhunter company?
I did. Yeah. Yes.
I love that.
Is that bad?
No, not at all. I've had quite the interaction with several people from your industry. So from headhunting, to writing fiction, when you're given the opportunity to, you know, try to reinvent yourself, what was the draw that led you to writing? Was it this thing that you had that had lingered with you from when you were a kid, or what was it that kept nagging at you that made you tell that first story?
I think it was that. I think it was remembering how much I enjoyed writing, and also a bit of an exploration, because I can't draw, I can't read music, I can't play an instrument, And I can't sing. In fact, I remember when distinctly one of my boys, when they were little, when I sang them a lullaby or something, they said, no, mommy, please don't sing, which was not very flattering, but there you go. And I always used to say that I didn't have a creative bone in my body. Turns out that's not true. When it comes to writing, I do. And that was quite the discovery in my early 40s to realize that actually I can tell stories. And it was fascinating to be able to unearth that talent, I suppose, that I didn't really know I'd had or I had or that I'd really forgotten about. So it was this nagging thing, and also the challenge. The challenge for me was, can I do this? Can I write a manuscript? Can I get an agent? Can I get a book deal? And I like the fact that the goalposts are always shifting. And in the former company that I worked for, the IT recruitment business, I remember my boss telling me once, you like being chucked into a situation that you've never been in before and where you have to figure stuff out. And that's true. For example, I remember at a management meeting once we decided we were going to open up a branch in Germany. And they said, okay, Hannah, you up for that? Sure, yeah, okay. I had no idea how to do that, but I knew how to find people who did. And so off I went. So it's the same in writing. It was, can I do this? It was this new challenge to figure out if it would actually go anywhere. And I'm not saying it was easy. It wasn't. And I'm not saying that I didn't get discouraged, because I did. But I stuck with it, and I'm very glad I did.
Do you remember, Hannah, what that original story idea was that came to you? And was it a moment of enlightenment or, an aha moment? Or was it more gradual than that? Was there a light bulb moment that drove you to write that first manuscript? Or was it, more kind of uncovering layer by layer until you realize that there was a story there?
It was a light bulb moment. It was pretty amazing. I don't remember where I was, but I distinctly remember thinking, I have an idea for a story. And it was so clear. So, and that turned into my first book, Time After Time, which is my one and only rom-com, because after that I moved to the dark side of suspense. But it was an idea of a woman who's in her early 40s, who may or may not have some curly brown hair, if anyone sees my profile picture, and who is unhappy with her life because, and this is where the similarities end, her father has had a stroke, she's lost her job, her husband's been made redundant, and her boss is basically out to get her. And she's wondering how her life might have turned out had she made different choices. Now, I was in a bad spot at the time because my company had tanked, and we'd moved to Canada, and I was desperately homesick. So I was also thinking about those things. If I hadn't met Rob, where would I be? What would I be doing? Not that I didn't want the life I was in. I have to add that very quickly. But it made me wonder. And then I thought, whoa, hang on a minute. This is a what if story. And I remember taking the kids. They were, I guess they were maybe seven, eight, something like that. And I took them to an indoor playground. And I took my laptop, I lined up snacks and water, and I said, go play. Leave mum alone, go play. And I sat there and I wrote the entire outline in 3 hours. And it was crystal clear. How the story would unfold. It changed and it morphed as I wrote the manuscript and had it edited and rejected and rewrote and all the rest of it. But I do remember that moment. It was a light bulb, crystal clear moment for me.
That's amazing. You talked about writing rom-com for your first book, and then switching over to the dark side after that. What do you think about writers exploring different genres before they kind of settle into where they're going to be? Is that something that in today's writing climate that you can do? It seems like You kind of need to have crystal clear focus and brand yourself and all of this kind of stuff. Is there room for writers to kind of explore different genres to find out where they're most comfortable in?
I think it probably depends on circumstances. For me, Time After Time had been acquired by HarperCollins UK, and they published it in 2016 as an ebook. So it was with their digital first campaign. So it exists as ebook only. Whereas my second, well, all of my subsequent books, The Neighbours and Her Secret Son in particular, they were acquired by HarperCollins US, by Mira, the Mira imprint, which is part of Harlequin. And they didn't mind that I had shifted genres because it was my second book, and The Neighbours was my first printed book. So it didn't bother them that my first one, Time After Time, had just been, was a rom-com. I think also because it, let's be very open, Time After Time didn't sell tens of thousands of copies. So I'd imagine if you have a mega hit with a rom-com and you sell hundreds of thousands of copies and then your next one is a police procedural, people might get a little bit confused. But I think there is room to explore, and I think it's healthy too. And you can always write under a pseudonym as well if you want to discover different genres or things that you'd like to write. And I know a number of authors who write under pseudonyms and write different genres to make sure that the books are adequately branded differently so there isn't this confusion. Having said that, there's another author called Hannah McKinnon, actually. She's American. She's from Connecticut. She's lovely. She writes wonderful, beautiful books. The Lake Season is one of them. She's fantastic. And I still get tagged on reviews for her books, which is lovely. But then I write, oh, you know, this is a lovely review, but I'm sorry to say it's not my book. I wish it were, but it isn't. So it's quite funny, really. So mine are the ones with the Mary in the title. If there's not a Hannah Mary, if there's no Mary in the Hannah Mary McKinnon, then it's chances are it's not mine.
Oh, that's so funny. It's so funny. So after the first book, you get it published and it gets out to the world. Then you start thinking about book two and how to follow that story up. And using your words, you went over to the dark side. What was the idea behind changing over to write the kinds of things that you do? Because I tell you, the new book, that we're, you know, here talking about today is called Sister Dear, and this is a crazy wild ride. What got you interested in telling these kinds of stories?
I think it's, there are two things. I think when I wrote Time After Time, I was writing my own happy ending, because I wasn't happy. And everything worked out fine. Everything's great. We've been married for almost 21 years and everyone's healthy and the kids are great and all that. But I think at the time I was really down. And I think I needed to just write something that was happy. And then the happier I became, and I am a very happy person, very jokey person, the darker my writing has become.
Isn't that funny?
It's weird, right? Yeah. I'm sure a psychologist would have a field day with that one.
Oh, I'm sure. Tell us how you really feel about your mother, Hannah.
Yeah, I love my mom. She's great. She's brilliant. So I think I'm really drawn to the darker side of things because it allows me to explore my own fears. I have a very stable family environment. I grew up in a very loving environment. My mum and dad have been together since the early 60s and love each other and all that. I have a sister who's lovely. She did not inspire Sister Dear. I have to add that too. But it allows me to explore that. What would that look like? How might that feel if I didn't have that stable environment? And it reminds me not to take it for granted because it is a privilege. So, but it also, frankly, allows me through my characters to explore the dark side of me. not that I would ever do the things in the book, of course, but it's really interesting to allow your mind to go to these places and to think about, oh, okay, so if I wanted to, in the next one that's coming out next year, I have a scene where, and I'm not spoiling anything, but I have a scene where somebody dies because they're working underneath a car and something is made to happen that they die. And these are all things that I would never do in real life, obviously, but my fictional characters are allowed to. And I can make them as evil as I please or as evil as my editor will let me. And that's it's kind of fun. It's not kind of fun. It is fun to do and perhaps a little strange, but I enjoy it. You know, you can't kill your colleagues in real life. It's frowned upon.
It is frowned upon for some strange reason. Yeah.
And rightly so. But going into my fictional characters' lives and wreaking havoc there is entertaining, hopefully, for people who read it. And that's what this is all about, is entertaining people who pick up my books and read them.
Were you surprised when you found a readership for these types of stories? And did you feel, I don't know if vindicated is the right word, did you feel like you had found your niche in the world?
Yes, and that was actually before The Neighbours came out, which was my first darker one. And I went to BoucherCon, the Murder Mystery Readers' Convention. And it happened to be in Toronto a couple of years ago. And I showed up, The Neighbours wasn't out. I had the rom-com Time After Time was out, but The Neighbours was still up and coming. We weren't even at the ARC stage, the advanced reader copy stage at that point. And I met all these wonderful authors. And you know what blew me away? For a bunch of somewhat strange, evil people, fictionally, I mean, because we write all this dark stuff, they are incredibly funny. They're so savvy. They were so welcoming. That, first of all, blew my mind. I had no idea that the writing community was so incredibly supportive. Remember, I came from IT recruitment, which could be pretty cutthroat. The writing community is so different. It's they offered to blurb my books. We connected to all over social media. We've become friends. It's incredibly supportive. And then when the book came out and my readership grew and people would send me notes and little Instagram messages and stuff about how much they enjoyed my books and when's the next one coming out. It's just so lovely. It's you're right. Vindicated isn't really the right word. It's so satisfying. And those lovely notes are just the balm for the writerly soul. You know, it's wonderful. It's truly unexpected and something that I didn't even know existed, this reading writing community. I had no idea.
It really is strange, isn't it? For people who, at least for the casual observer, it looks like they're in competition with one another. We know in the writer community that is not the truth. We're actually competing with things like YouTube and the telephone and all of these distractions to find readers. And when we latch on to someone and they see how much enjoyment can come from a story like this, then, you know, we know that there's room for all of us in there once we get a reader turned on. Tell me about Sister Dear. Do you remember a moment when this story kind of came alive to you? And was it another one of those aha moments? Or was this a slow build that built into the idea for this story?
This one came, I was in my car, I was driving probably somewhere to pick up one of the kids or something, and there was a segment on the news, on the radio, where a woman was trying to find the owner of a wedding ring that she'd found at a playground. And I was listening as she was saying, she was on Twitter and she was trying to find the rightful owner, and I thought, oh, that's a neat story. And then the dark side of my brain kicked in. And I thought, oh, hang on a minute. What if she found the owner of this ring and realized that owner had a life that she could only ever dream of? And she feels jealous and she starts stalking them. And that was it. That was where the idea came from. And the ring does feature in Sister Dear. It's not how the story starts, of course, but that element is actually in the book. So that's, I remember exactly how that idea came about, as I do for most of my books, actually, strangely.
Do you notice that it's more of an aha moment for you, that the ideas just kind of rush in and, all the synapses are firing and it happens like that? I've talked to other people who it's more of a slow build. It's a piece by piece by piece. The creative process kind of works on layers for them. It sounds to me like for you, it's one of these moments where everything just rushes in. And there's kind of a story fully formed that starts kind of running, wide open in your brain.
I wish it were fully formed. That would be great. Not quite fully formed. No, I mean, for Sister Dear, I had this idea of this stalker, basically, with the ring. And then as I sat down and I started plotting it and developing the story, I realized that it would be more interesting and compelling in my mind if the two were related. And that's where the half-sister thing comes in, because the women, they're two half-sisters, they don't know the other one exists, and then one of them finds out and realizes her glamorous, beautiful, wonderfully happy half-sister has everything and is everything that she could only ever dream of. And then the whole jealousy stalking thing comes in. So I guess fully formed, no. So for the neighbors, I was standing, we live on a courtyard and there are 9 houses and 2 went up for sale in quick succession. And I was standing by the window with a cup of tea, probably being nosy, looking out on the courtyard. And I was looking at the for sale signs and I thought, I wonder who's going to move in. Wow, wouldn't it be weird if it was an ex-boyfriend? Oh, awkward. And that's the story for the neighbors. So I know, it's weird. So the idea was there that, oh, wow, what if an ex-boyfriend moved in next door? That would be awkward. But what would make it really awkward? What are they hiding? What are they lying about? Why don't they tell their respective partners that they used to be lovers? What's going on? What's their story? So the idea came as the what if, fully formed. But the entire story to build around it needed a lot of work. So that's generally how it is. It's the what if. So I have the same for the book that's coming out next year and the one that I'm writing now for the year after, where I had a what if moment, but then I had to build the rest of the plot. So I wish it came fully formed. That would be awesome. It might take me 2 months to write a book instead of 6 or 7.
Right. So tell me about
3 years.
Right. So tell me about Eleanor Hardwick. Who is she? And when we first meet her in the book, she really kind of has this idyllic existence, and she loses one of her parents, and from there everything goes to hell in a handbasket, basically. As a great, psychological suspense will do, that we start kind of unraveling the sweater, from this loose thread. Tell me about Eleanor Hardwick. How did she come to you? And what is she dealing with?
So Eleanor is in her late 20s. She's been battered up by life a little bit, I'd say. She's a bit of a recluse. She doesn't have many friends. She has a very difficult relationship with her mum, and she doesn't understand why it's so difficult. She doesn't understand why her mum carries this animosity towards her. And she doesn't get along with her younger sister, Amy, who's 27. But she loves her dad. So her dad is her rock, and he is her everything. But as the book opens, she's going to visit him at a hospice because he's dying from pancreatic cancer. And she's basically a mess. I mean, her whole life is turned upside down through the diagnosis. And when she goes to see him, and this isn't a spoiler, she goes to see him, she overhears a conversation between her mum and her dad, who are divorced, but her mum went to see her father at the hospice. And she learns that she is not his biological daughter. And that obviously is exceedingly devastating for her. And as you said, things go to hell in a handbasket at that point. Poor Eleanor. That's just chapter one. Oh, dear. I'm sorry, Eleanor. So she came to me, I think. I developed her character, and I thought I wanted, I didn't want a protagonist that was, and I don't mean perfect, but close to perfect, beautiful and thin and all the rest of it. I wanted somebody who had a distinct lack of self-confidence, who had body issues, because I don't see that very often, I think, in the books that I read. And I thought it would be very interesting to write about somebody for whom I hope people feel for, but don't agree, certainly not all of the time, with the choices she makes. So it's that kind of, oh no, Eleanor, what are you doing? And, oh yes, I agree what you're doing there, but no, why you? No, oh gosh, no, don't do that. Those were the feelings I was hoping to achieve with the people who read the book. So she was very interesting to write. She was difficult to write in certain aspects, because sometimes I just wanted to go and give her a hug, and other times I wanted to give her a good talking to because of the choices she was making. But she was very interesting to write. Because it's in first person, past tense, I could really, really get into her head. And I remember my husband, Rob, when I finished the book and I turned it in, he said, oh, I'm glad, because, you know, she's been following you around, hasn't she? And she had, you know, that's what my characters do. They follow you around. And she perhaps wasn't the best person to hang out with all day, every day for hours on end, because she's a bit twisted, really.
And, you know, that is the interesting thing about having a flawed protagonist and having someone who is a bit more like all of the rest of us. You know, there are some protagonists that we've read in some fairly disturbing works, but they're kind of perfect people. They kind of look perfect, and there's a certain amount of holding them at arm's length, because they are so perfect, that we don't allow ourselves to completely get lost in a story. There's something strange about a flawed protagonist that lets us throw off all of the ways that we distance ourselves from a story. But you know, there's something really interesting about Eleanor that we kind of relate to. And it's easy to kind of fall into her. I can only imagine what that must have been like as the writer, to write someone like that, who could so easily envelop who you are.
Yes. Yes, it was really interesting, honestly. And I try very, very hard when I'm writing, and as I'm developed, before I even start writing, I interview my characters. I know that sounds weird, but bear with me. I have, I think it's three pages, a three-page questionnaire where there are the standard things. What do they look like? The height, the weight, the eye color, that kind of stuff. But then also things like, have they ever seen a dead body? Do they believe in ghosts? And most of this stuff doesn't make it into the book, but it makes them real to me. And they do become very real. I remember with Eleanor also, but very distinctly with her secret son, which was last year's book, the protagonist is called Josh. And when I'd handed the book in for the last time after copy edits and proofreading and everything was done, I remember thinking, oh man, I'm going to miss him. I felt almost bereft because I wasn't able to spend more time with him, which sounds so weird. But writers are a little strange at times, and these are our quirks, because the biggest compliment to me when people read my book and they say, one of my books, and they say, you know what, that character XYZ felt so real, I half expected them to walk in through the door. That's probably one of the most wonderful compliments a reader can pay me.
Absolutely. We're kind of talking around the story because I don't want to give away too much of this book
Let's not.
to readers, because I really want them to go on this journey that I've been on with me and with you in this book. You've mentioned that you are working on next year's book and thinking about the follow-up to that. How far in advance are you going with these writing endeavors? Like when one finishes, how do you begin the next one? How do you just wipe the slate clean and get ready to fall into someone else's foibles?
Well, it's a strange time at the moment, because just I think last week I did a book club, a Skype book club for the neighbors. Last week I did a discussion as well with another book club for her secret son. The Sister Dee is about to come out. Book five, next year's book, was in edits, and book six is plotted, and I'm about to start writing it. So it's many hats. But because I think the stories are quite distinct and different, it's easy really to move from one project to a next, to the next in that sense. So in terms of timing, I handed in the first, not my first draft, but the first draft for my editor of next year's book, book five, we'll call it, because it doesn't yet have a title, back in January. So now I've already, came back to me. I've done structural edits. Structural edits are the big ticket items, the plot holes and things that really aren't working, rather than line edits. So that one I'm expecting to get back from her at some point for another round of edits, probably within the next couple of weeks. But in the interim, I'll start writing book six, which will come out in 2 years' time, hopefully, depending on how things shift with COVID. So that one's plotted, and I know what I'm doing with that one. I hope, or I think I do. I have a roadmap anyway. We'll see where I get to at the end, but it's pretty clear, I think. So I'll be able to start on that one. And I think, so in terms of moving from one project to the next, I have to say, when I received the structural editorial letter from my editor for book five, I was in the middle of plotting book six, and I just asked her if we could wait to talk about the structural edits on book five for a week or two so I could finish the plot, because otherwise things might have got a little bit muddled, and I didn't want to take things I was thinking about for book six and somehow put them into book five and vice versa. So sometimes I do need a little bit of distance, but if I'm plotting one book and promoting another, there are no issues with crossover. That's not a problem at all. It's fun, actually. It's kind of fun to go back to books that came out a couple of years ago and talk about them, because they're fresh and new for the readers. And it's lovely for me to revisit those characters. Yeah, it's always fun. I love joining book clubs online. It's so much fun.
Well, since you mentioned the COVID-19 that we're all dealing with, I've talked to numerous writers throughout this, because you know, we're still doing five podcasts a week during this lockdown, and you know, for us, not a lot has changed, but you know, because we're all in kind of, you know, Skyping from home offices and things like that. But as someone who also writes, and as well as talk about writing, I've noticed that there's something weird going on with writers during this time. It's kind of more difficult to focus, and I've talked to a lot of people, and the idea of kind of being told that you have to stay at home is kind of playing mental games on people. Have you experienced any of that, and what are you doing to stay focused, stay on track with your writing, editing, and, you know, whatever phase that you're at, you know, with the current project that you're working on? How are you staying sane during this time and keeping on track with what you have to do?
Well, to be honest, I think, so our kids were off for March break, middle of March, when self-isolation, lockdown and social distancing and schools being closed and all of that was really, really just starting. And I freaked out for probably 10 days solid. I would watch the news. I would watch the numbers of cases go up. And I was exceedingly worried. And then I stopped watching the news for my own sanity. I stopped looking at the numbers. I made a conscious decision to step away because there was nothing I could do about it. The only control I had was over our little bubble, our family of five. And that was the only thing I could do. Everybody was safe. Everybody was healthy. And that I had a deadline and I had to focus on that. So not watching the news, number one, which not necessarily the best thing, but because you need to know what's going on, of course. But watching it certainly far less and not obsessively really, really helped, just stepping away. And I launched a new project. So I was chatting with a couple of authors online about our books coming out during COVID and all of our events being cancelled and how is that going to work and how are people going to find our books and basically wondering whether the sky was falling and what was going to happen and all the rest of it. And I said half jokingly to a few of them, I said, well, what if I read the first chapter of your books online? And I thought maybe half a dozen, maybe a dozen people would agree to me giving that a go. And, you know, within 3 days, I had over 40 people lined up. It just went bananas. So I created this first chapter fun series, I called it. And from March 17th until May the 8th, every day, 53 days in a row, at 11:30 a.m. Eastern, I read the first chapter of a different book, not mine, but other authors, on my Facebook author page and on my Instagram, which are both Hannah Mary McKinnon. And Hank Philippi Ryan contacted me, who's just fantastic. She is just brilliant and the best, and I adore her. She's just wonderful. And she contacted me and she said, this first chapter fun thing, it's brilliant. Are you continuing with the series? And I said, well, you know, every day is a bit much to read. There's a lot of prep that goes in. I have to get the author's permission, obviously, but the publishers too, and materials and graphics. And every day is a bit, because I'm supposed to write books and my publishers expect me to deliver a manuscript. So not every day. And she said, well, what if we teamed up? And so we did. And so last week, on May the 12th, we launched our brand new Facebook group, which is First Chapter Fun, and a brand new Instagram account, which is also called First Chapter Fun. And we read every Tuesday and every Thursday. So the days with a tea, Tuesday and Thursday, tea with Hank and Hannah, at 11:30 a.m. Eastern. And we read the first chapter of a different book. Again, not ours, but different books. And we have authors lined up until, I think we're scheduling them into December now. So that was also an incredible distraction, which was exactly what I needed because it enabled me to support other authors, which is, it's incredibly important to me to support other authors and pay the support that I have received from them forward. That's really, really important. And that's what First Chapter Fun is all about. But selfishly, it was a great distraction because instead of watching the news and watching the numbers of COVID cases climbing, I was focusing on practicing the first chapter of a different book. So I did them justice, you know. So I've actually been incredibly busy since being at home, since having to stay at home. And I work from home anyway on my writing. So in that sense, not a lot has changed. And I haven't been obsessing about COVID anymore. And it's been a delight to do the project and now with Hank as well to continue it.
I love that so much. I first met Hank, someone mistagged one of us on Twitter, I think. And we met that way. And then she wound up coming on the show and we had such a great time with her.
That's amazing.
Yes, yes.
That's so incredible.
So much fun. So much fun. This new book is one of the best psychological thrillers that I've read in quite a long time. Sister Dear, wow. It's available everywhere now when you're hearing this. Congratulations on launch day, by the way. There are links
Thank
to it
you.
in the show notes of this episode. It's out available in Kindle edition, audiobook, in paperback. You know, until bookstores open back up, this is a great audiobook to get as well. Go grab it if you have an Audible subscription. If you don't, use go to audibletrial.com/Hank. You can sign up for a free trial of it. And then, you know, when your bookstore opens back up, go grab, you know, the hardcover to have on your shelf, the hard copy of this, because this is a book that you'll want to keep around for quite a while. Hannah, if people are just learning about you and want to dig into all the great stuff that you do, is there a place they can connect with you online?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So my website, and thank you for that lovely compliment, by the way, before I before I rattle off my social media. That's amazing. Thank you. So my website is hannahmarymckinnon.com. That's also my Facebook page, author page, and my Instagram handle, Hannah Mary McKinnon. And otherwise, Twitter, I'm actually, they wouldn't allow Hannah Mary McKinnon. It's too long. So it's Hannah M. McKinnon. But if you go to my website, hannahmarymckinnon.com, you'll find all of the social links. I love connecting with readers. It really is a pleasure. So please send me a note or a tweet or a Instagram message or a Facebook message or whatever it is, because it's always lovely to hear from readers.
Absolutely. Also, on your website is a link where they can read a lot of your short fiction as well, which we didn't even get into this time. But you've got to come back and let's talk about writing short fiction and the role of it in modern literature. There's so much we didn't get to. But Hannah Mary McKinnon, thank you so much for taking time to come on the show today. We're going to send everyone to pick up their copy of the new book, Sister Dear, and to connect with you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Hank. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very, very much.
Authors, I have a fantastic new service to tell you about. It's called PubSite. PubSite is a service to help you build your very own website, your home on the web, where you can promote your work and give your fans a place to connect with you. PubSite is a website platform that allows every author, regardless of budget, to have a great-looking professional website. Developed by the book marketing professionals at FSB Associates, PubSite is the new easy-to-use DIY website builder developed specifically for books and authors. Whether you're an author of one book or 20, or a small publisher, PubSite allows you to build, design, and most importantly, update your website pain-free. No need to be dependent on a designer or webmaster to make a small but costly change to your website. Save the money and do it yourself. PubSite is the best platform for authors because it's a book-centric platform. PubSite was built just for authors and small publishers. Every design, feature, and layout is book-centric. They have customized designs for you to use. It's easy to build. No coding or HTML is necessary to create a stunning, professional-looking website with all the features you want. Get a custom domain name, yourname.com. It's simple to update. You can add all of your books, add a blog and a book tour, sell from any retailer, manage your email list and social media, and even do e-commerce. Build your website with a 14-day free trial, then pay just $19.99 per month, which includes hosting. And we offer packages starting at $499 to set up the website for you. Pub-site.com, the place to help authors find their home on the web.